And I really appreciate everybody for listening. This is Fire Breathing Rob. If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, we greatly appreciate it. Please subscribe. And actually, the people that we are interviewing, they really have so many aspects that we talk about throughout the interview. It's, you know, books, it's sports, it's politics, it's everything in the kitchen sink, to be honest with you. So definitely follow these people and listen to what they have to see. Say rather, we always go into these interviews with an open mind. If you're listening to us on YouTube, definitely subscribe, like, share, and also hit the button to make sure that you get those updates. That's that bell. So definitely hit the bell. And any other platform, we appreciate that too. Wow, that is a mouthful now that I have to say all that stuff now. So if you're still with me, thank you for that. And we're going to move into a great interview. And she has done so many things. And reading about the 8 master's degrees, I mean, I've never heard of anybody having that, woman, man, animal, whatever. It's really incredible. Rachel A. Winston, she is a PhD, and we're going to be talking about quite a few books and other issues that she's done and been into. So, Rachel, first of all, congratulations on getting 8 master's degrees. That is an incredible feat. I've only got 1. I can't even imagine getting 8. So we'll even just start on that before we get into the books. How the heck did you do 8 master's degrees? It's incredible.
Yeah, so this, I'm working on my 8th master's degree right now, and I go to school. Last year, I graduated from 2 colleges. I graduated from Harvard, and I graduated from Cal State Dominguez Hills. At Harvard, I studied international relations, and at Cal State Dominguez Hills, I studied negotiation, conflict resolution, and peace building. So there really hasn't been a time in almost 50 years that I have not been in college. So I'm always taking college classes. I did teach college for 35 years. So I believe that really, if you're going to master any subject, you really have to understand the big picture of both where people are coming from, where students in my case were coming from, and how to apply each of the concepts to the things that mean something to them in their lives. So I didn't want to be just a math professor. I wanted to be a math professor who could really talk to you about anything. And I'm still like that. I'm still exploring new topics. And my 8th master's degree isn't the last one. I've worked on 3 PhDs. I started college when I was 13. So, I mean, I've been in college really my entire life.
Well, when people say lifelong learner, I definitely am going to start thinking about and picturing Rachel Winston in my mind for sure, because there is no other lifelong learner that I've met. You know, people say, oh, I'm a lifelong learner, but, you know, they're not even close to you. It's like you're like on mile 30 and they're starting on mile 1. So it's really incredible. So I just wanted to start that out. So this is a person that really knows what the hell they are talking about. So you guys can definitely listen in and know that right from the start. But with the Olympics starting up right now in Tokyo, and, you know, obviously due to COVID, this is a whole different ball game where we're going to have one Olympic right after another, with the Beijing Olympics coming up in 2022. And I know your book will go into this, but we'll start about this. Firstly, you know, there has been a lot of talk of people boycotting the Olympics. I think one of the U.S. soccer players actually, or the soccer coach actually, just came out and talked about boycotting the Olympics in general. So with that said, can you talk about that situation in China and really what they're doing to this group of Muslims, putting them in concentration camps, when we have heard, you know, obviously the Jewish community suffered back in World War II, but even after that, you know, we think of America and the concentration camps in America with the Japanese too, which a lot of people don't bring up as much, but I think that's an important topic too, to bring up with those two in concentration camps and, you know, in camps in general that we've had in general in the world. So can you go deep into this as far as Beijing? Maybe if you want to even extend on how, you know, this is the same of what the Nazis did to the Jews too?
Yeah. So the Olympics, the Tokyo Olympics are coming right around the corner next week, the end of this week. And right after that in February, Beijing is going to hold the 2022 Beijing Olympics. The question here is, you see, 180 human rights groups have called for the boycott of the 2022 Olympics, as have countries all over the United States, even bipartisan support on both sides of the aisle for a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Beijing Olympics. But there's the heightened concern is certainly about what's happening in Xinjiang province, right? So in China's Western province, they have hundreds of concentration camps, hundreds of them. And the Uyghur Muslims, as well as some Kazakhs and Kyrgyz and so on, are being, they're put in these concentration camps and they have forced labor, organ harvesting. They take their organs out while they're alive. They torture them into submission, and China calls it re-education. The United States has said, you know, enough. The Biden administration has pushed back. The Biden administration has called for companies to stop working with China because of the forced labor and the danger to cotton types of products. Lots of companies have been ensnared in this. And just recently, H&M, Adidas, and Nike have, you know, talked about pulling back from using Xinjiang workers. But in 1936, Hitler held the Olympics in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And this is before the concentration camps. And then afterwards, he took off and took territories throughout Europe. Right after the Sochi Olympics, Putin went and took territories in an aggressive move. And now we're concerned, there's great concern that Xi Jinping will hold this grand Olympics in February of 2022 and just afterwards push into Taiwan and try to ensnare Taiwan and other territories. So there's an alarm on multiple levels about what China's doing and the danger to US businesses.
How did this, you know, basically slaughter of Muslims start in China?
It's all, you know, a guesstimate, but okay. My best understanding is that after 9/11 and the United States having the downing of the Twin Towers, and I think it scared the world. You know, we say it scared us, but I think it scared a lot of other people that terrorism is real, and not only real, but it can take down the biggest, baddest, meanest, most magnificent financial institutions in the world, right? And poof, they're gone. And when I think that part of China's anxiety happened starting at 9/11. And after that, they were worried about Muslim terrorists. So anywhere there were Muslims in China, they were watched and they were concerned. And so here now they have this whole territory region. It's a very large region, actually, Xinjiang, China, in which they have all these Muslims. And then a fight broke out in southern China. So like there has to be some kind of precipitating moment. A fight broke out in southern China in a manufacturing facility. And it happened between some Uyghur Muslims and some Han Chinese. And after that, the Chinese blamed it on the Uyghur Muslims and few of them died. And then there were protests in Urumqi in northern China, northwestern China. And after that, the massacre up there, which China said happened to the Chinese, but actually it was against the Muslims. After that, lockdown, They now have cameras outside of people's homes. They take Han Chinese and move them into to Uyghur Muslims' homes to stay, to live with the families so that they can learn how to be real Chinese. There are cameras now everywhere, surveillance everywhere. They're not allowed to have halal food. They're not allowed to, their stores were taken away. They have to eat Chinese food. They're forced to eat pork and alcohol, which is against their religion. They're not allowed to have religion. Xi Jinping even said he wanted everyone in China to be unyielding Marxist atheists. That's a quote, unyielding Marxist atheist. And so after that, the lockdown in Xinjiang, people started being rounded up and the concentration camp system started growing and continues to grow. And so this story is against the Muslims now, but it's against people. It's against humans. It's not one religion or another religion. You can't do this to anyone, and it doesn't matter what religion you are. China says all of the these millions of people are terrorists. Really? Really? They're all terrorists? And so it's just not acceptable to me that it happens at all, but that is really China's fear. They have an overwhelming fear that something is going to happen inside of China, some kind of civil war inside of China. And the one thing they're going to put the water on, and they're going to melt away every person who could possibly be a threat to the country, whether they have to commit torture or genocide or lock them up forever.
I think Disney also, there was an issue with Disney back maybe about a month or two ago, when obviously they made that movie Mulan, and there was a lot of talk about, you know, basically the same issue that you're bringing up, that Disney got caught in the fire. They were thanking this group that was involved with this insanity that's going on in China. So, and I think Disney did apologize, but the people that were helping them in that area, they did put them in the credits too for the movie Mulan. So, but my question is, and we saw this actually with the Hong Kong protests, where we saw, you know, some people speak out about this. I think it was the general manager of the Houston Rockets. And I know this is a different topic, but it goes to the same kind of thing with China and the U.S., that the general manager of the Houston Rockets spoke out against those protests. And then he had to apologize. We saw, I believe it was one of the wrestlers from the WWE who was in Fast and Furious 7. He came out and, you know, they're trying to target all this movie Fast and Furious 7 to China because they're going to be making more money. So it just seems to, in a short segment here, we'll say this, that the U.S. is sold out to China right now. Not only do we see those things in entertainment such as the NBA, Disney, and the WWE, but we also see, you know, in the coronavirus era, where we didn't have enough ventilators because we've outsourced so many jobs and all this production to China. We didn't have enough masks because they were being made in China. You know, Dr. Fauci says at the beginning, you know, we can't wear the masks because, you know, the hospital workers don't have enough masks because people just buy everything in sight. And that is a lot to do with, you know, a whole different song and dance about what's happened in America over the past 40, 50 years in general with the production aspect. But I guess where I'm getting with that is, do you think it's kind of, you know, Biden can talk the talk, but can he really walk the walk? You know, Nike and all these other companies can talk the talk, but are they really going to walk the walk and really go away from China? I don't see that.
Yeah. So a couple of things. The first one is Daryl Morey from the Houston Rockets. Just one tweet. Look what happens. You lose millions of dollars because you have one tweet that says that I support Hong Kong. However he said it, it doesn't matter. Last Friday, the Biden administration warned U.S. businesses working with Hong Kong that they were in danger. There was risks to their own person that they could be imprisoned because foreign nationals have been imprisoned. There's risk to their operations. There's constant secure surveillance. Their data is compromised because China requires that they give up all their data. And as the heat gets higher, like with yesterday's accusation, charge of cyber espionage that's gone around the world. It's not just the United States. NATO, EU, our allies are all condemning China for cyber espionage, for taking hostages like Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, the Canadians that have been that were put in jail for years. They're still in jail, right? This could happen to any of us if we go into China or we work with China or we have businesses in China. Hostage diplomacy is real. And since businesses are in danger, there's a concern that needs to be spread. Now, on the one hand, what you were saying about Nike and Adidas and H&M and those companies, mm-hmm. I don't think they would have stopped using free labor. I mean, free right. labor. Look, you know, if you have to, if you do your purchase manufacturing in the United States, you're going to pay workers a salary and benefits and vacation time. And all this is, they have no vacation time. They have no, there's no, it's slavery, right? They just put them in prison and they're slaves. So China likes to say that the United States once had slaves. That's fine. But this is today and this isn't yesterday. So I don't think that those companies would have pulled back from Xinjiang at all if there hadn't been some pressure. Okay. So I think that the danger is really high, and more push in the media will make it a little bit clearer. But let me go to one other thing that you said, which is really important, because I think you were right on. There are companies all over the United States that sell T-shirts or clothes or pens, or these things are all produced in China, right?
Dollar Tree. Go to the Dollar Tree. Go on Amazon. A lot of this stuff is all Chinese made.
Walmart, like, you know, right. You go to these things that are cheap products. The products that are cheap came because there is no cost of labor, right? If you don't have cost of labor, and you have these people work 12 to 14 hours a day with no vacations. I mean, this isn't like in the United States. We can't, we are purchasing, we are the ones that are guilty. We are the ones that are buying the Chinese products. It's not someone else that's buying them. We say, we want a cheap toaster. It doesn't matter. We want a cheap phone. We want cheap technology. We want it to be inexpensive. We continue to purchase, and we are making China great again. I mean, we are really building China so that it can achieve its goal of global dominance.
Well, I laugh at the infrastructure in our country, and, you know, we are, you know, on the peak of getting the infrastructure bill passed. It went from $2.3 trillion to $1 trillion, and obviously there are the family programs that line up to the $4 trillion altogether with the $3.5 trillion for that. So it's a lot of trillions in one sentence. But regardless of that, my thing is, and this is what I want to ask you, Rachel, to follow up on what you're saying, is it's really scary because, you know, obviously, and not to repeat the same thing, but we went through the pandemic. We could, you know, have that again. We still haven't fully beat the pandemic. Something could come worse down the road. And if we're not manufacturing any of this stuff in our country, whether it's masks, ventilators, I mean, we just went through a whole thing about semiconductors. I mean, the Senate just finally signed a bill to get a little bit more funding towards semiconductors. It wasn't enough at all as far as that bill went, but at least there was something that's a start. But we're in a country where it's really decapitating itself. You know, the infrastructure is terrible, you know, in all aspects, in all parts of the country. And we don't have the good supplies we need because of the 80s. And you worked in these administrations and worked in Congress. So you can go more in depth about that. But, you know, as a progressive myself, I think back to the 80s and the Reagan Revolution. And Reagan did a lot of good things as far as fighting Gorbachev, fighting the Soviet Union, terrorism and that aspect. But we look at the deregulation that went from Reagan to Bush to Clinton to George W. Bush. And it's just really screwed up this country. And I think Clinton obviously was the worst because he was involved with negotiating with China, with the World Trade Organization. And that was really where, excuse my language, but shit hit the fan. And that was the game over for the U.S. Do you agree with any of that?
I think that, Nixon opened the first door,
right,
and other presidents opened doors afterwards. Right. I think there was a lot of hope. Not that I defend any I'm a libertarian, so I'm kind of like in the middle somewhere, but
that's fair.
But I think that a lot of presidents had great hope that with the rise of China, there would be a rise of a goodness like that, that these people who had come out of such a horrible situation with their civil war, with World War II, then the Civil War, and so on, that they would want to have freedom and democracy and choice, and yet it has only gotten worse. So we can look back at history and go, gosh, look at these people who buddied up with China, but they did because I think they really did, in their defense, they really did believe that China would be a peaceful nation. And China keeps on saying we're a peaceful nation, but they're not peaceful. They've encroached onto India. They've encroached onto Vietnam. They've encroached onto the Philippines. They've taken over islands that don't belong to them. They violate rule of law. There's nothing peaceful about a country that is grabbing parts of other countries around the world. This is not peaceful. This is only doomed to failure. And the threat to Hong Kong is just a microcosm of such a scary situation. You think about what happened in just a short amount of time. They've closed the newspapers. They've told anyone that believes in freedom that they cannot run for office. They have total control. This is a totalitarian nightmare. And just outside of Hong Kong, not too far away, is Taiwan.
Yeah.
Taiwan, this country that really was the hope that we had for China. And China has gone in there daily with planes and with boats and threatened Taiwan. And Taiwan is small. Mm-hmm. But if Taiwan falls, China says that Taiwan belongs to China anyway. But if Taiwan falls, you see the next Senkaku Islands are right outside of that part of Japan, right outside of Taiwan, and Taiwan and Japan is right outside. I mean, China really has its tentacles. That my second book is China's Power Grab. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of interesting because I put this image of China like grabbing hold of the world on the front cover. It's China's really taking bits of the entire world, and we had this hope that our presidents. We had this hope that China would be a good country because its rhetoric is like that. They have propaganda that just spreads, we are good, we share, we give, we are benevolent, we are kind. And then they, as soon as they get in, they go, you owe us and we're going to take your infrastructure and we're going to take your port. I mean, literally, they took Sri Lanka's ports. I mean, they have gone in and like carved out the world. And it is not benevolent, kind, or peaceful at all. Win-win diplomacy only means that China wins.
Well, my thing is, first of all, China's really smart because they're going into countries in Africa and they're saying, we'll build your roads, we'll build your schools, we'll build your airports and everything in the kitchen sink. And then, that country owes they own the country. To be honest. So they own all these countries in Africa And, you know, as far as natural resources, they're there first. So that country's going to say, you want our natural resources? You're going to build up the whole damn country? We'll give them to you for free, nothing. And that's what I'm worried about, too, of what they're doing in the whole continent of Africa. They're just slithering through and getting all the natural resources. And our country is way behind in that. And also, and if you can extend on this, too, is what's happening with North Korea. Now, we know the Trump administration, President Trump, went over there and met with Kim Jong-un. We don't know how his health is right now. There's been talks that his sister or his daughter, I you can correct me where I'm at on that, is going to take over or could take over that. And she's just as psychotic and nuts as he is. And obviously, China has so much power in that region that they can control North Korea with the snap of the fingers, but they're just playing games and they're letting them do whatever they want. So can you talk to the viewers about that aspect with the North Korea and as far as China and how much control China has over North Korea, and then dabble into the African issue?
Well, I think that... In international affairs, it's kind of interesting that we hear these 30-second sound bites and we think we understand what's happening in the world. And in right. fact, I would say with North Korea, more than any other country, we know not very much. So for me to speculate on what is happening with North Korea, I don't know that any of the sources are, I don't believe any of the sources, and I don't know. All I know is what they do. If you send out some kind of bomb or something, or you fire weapons and you build something, I can see that. We can count that. But the problem is that in terms of who is controlling what, I do not believe we have enough information okay. to really know, probably, and I don't think we're going to know for a long time because CIA, FBI, they're not going to share that information. So I think that that North Korea is really like a bubble, and we, you know, it lives on its own, and it's just, I don't know.
I just can't even put a word onto it. You know, you look at that part of the world with Russia and China having, you know, obviously I don't know if you would call Russia a superpower. I guess you still would. But two superpowers over there, and you know, they are so close to North Korea. That's why I felt like, you know, they have so much more influence than obviously than the US. It's not even close.
With Russia, Russia's kind of an interesting country. It's massive.
Right.
I mean, it's the largest country in the world. And we don't think of it that way in terms of geography. It's just huge. It also has a lot of natural resources. I went in the Belt and Road book that is coming out this week that I wrote. It talks about like where Russia's oil fields are. They have a ton of money sitting underneath Russia. And, you know, this whole Nord, the gas pipeline.
The pipeline, yes.
Yeah, in Europe. I mean, one of the reasons why it's a big deal is because Russia isn't really a powerful country right this minute, but it very well could be a whole lot more powerful than pipeline. And in part because it has access to a lot of resources. China does not have the oil. China has to get its oil from the Middle East and from Africa. So it has gone around to get all of its energy needs. It does not have those energy needs. That's why it went out to Africa. Mm. Now, there's a bunch of chapters on Africa in my books as well. In particular, the Belt and Road Initiative book. It's called Belt and Road Under Beijing's Thumb. And that book talks about a lot of the different kinds of contracts that China's done over in Africa. And you're right. It has made this negotiation in which I will build a road and you will pay this money. And if you cannot pay this money, then I will take your natural resources. So until you can pay this back the money. But if the natural, like what happened in the pandemic was horrible for them because the oil prices dove down. Countries like Angola, right? That with the oil prices going crashing, when they had to still pay their debt to China, that, right? So if you're getting a dollar and now you're getting 20 cents, you have to pay five times as much. So I mean, they're, you know, China was able to get more and you know, in other countries, Tanzania, like, you know, there's some countries that are so in debt to China that they may never ever get out of that debt. They didn't absolve the debt during the pandemic. They didn't wipe out the debt like some of the contracts that IMF had. You know, China said, you still owe us. And a lot of countries, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, right? And now with Afghanistan, you know, there's talk about China moving into Afghanistan. Little do you know, or do most people know, because they don't think of Central Asia. We don't like see maps of Central Asia every day, but Afghanistan actually borders on China. There's like this little piece that goes out to China. So China actually borders, very small, but borders onto to Afghanistan, and it's dangerous there with China trying to use its money and influence to move into Afghanistan as soon as the United States picks its foot up. Now, there are pundits or opinion writers who say that China is worried or China wishes the United States would stay. Really? With China's money, and China uses its money really well. Like you said, China is smart. I mean, if you step back and you were going to create the worst or best totalitarian government that just went in and took anything it wanted by giving money to people and buying their souls or the souls of presidents, China is the poster child, right? Amazing job. My first papers at Harvard were on China's remarkable rise, because I was just so amazed looking at the economics of the world, how amazing it was that China was able to rise so fast. But now I'm not quite as excited in the same way, because China's rising really fast by taking from other people. So yes, they were smart going into Africa. Africa needed money. China had the money, and now they say, you know, you owe us. I think we're moving into a decade that is a lot more worrisome, because if you remember history from World War II, what Hitler did was in a bunch of different countries, he created chaos from inside. Now look at what's happened in the United States. You hear what I'm saying? He created chaos from inside. They fought against each other. And Hitler said, we'll come in and we'll make your country safe again. And then took the country. And you can see little by little, there are countries that with China's propaganda and influence from the inside, that they're creating these dangerous situations. And it's worrisome for all of us.
Is that what you were alluding to? Is people fighting against each other like they are in this country? It's Democrat versus Republican. It's Trump supporter against Biden. And people are fighting, but people aren't seeing what the big pictures are as far as the big fundamental issues that are really crushing our country, such as jobs, such as, you know, there's no manufacturing in this country, infrastructure, healthcare. Is that what you're saying?
So, I mean, China's really doing a lot more propaganda and infiltrating parties and creating havoc in the Philippines, in Southeast Asia. Like, look at, you know, because it's their backyard, they want to be the regional hegemon. They want to to have total control over Southeast Asia. And they want the United States past the first island chain past the second island chain, you stay over in North America, right? China does not want the United States to have freedom of navigation operations in the South China Sea. They don't want freedom of navigation. They want Chinese law instituted in the South China Sea. Right. And so this is our big problem, because once, if China can cut out and take away freedom of navigation or freedom of air flight with, you know, having ADIZs in over Southeast Asia, this is where the strife has to happen first, so they can get, so China can get everybody to, like, look at Laos, look at Myanmar, look at, you know, look at the Southeast Asian countries. China's gone in and created havoc so that China can come in and say, we can save the day. Now, I did kind of allude to the fact that some of this is happening in the United States. Certainly they have their hackers and propaganda people. Like, just yesterday, the Biden administration issued a warning about cyber espionage in the United States, with the United States companies and the dangers that China poses by having stealing all of our intellectual property. It is happening here, but it isn't the first place it's happening. It's, you know, any country that's really smart that wants to take over, you know, piece by piece. A Hungarian diplomat called it salami slicing, which I use in my book, you know, taking a little piece of salami at a time. Right. China's picking the low-hanging fruit, you know, the one slice of salami. You know, we'll just take 10 feet of India today and 100 feet of Nepal tomorrow. And, you know, then we're going to take a few miles into Bhutan, right? They're taking, doing land grabs, building their villages inside other countries, just on the other side of the border, right? Just a little bit, salami slicing, a little bit at a time. Have you watched how apartment complexes grow? You know, they build the first apartment complex, and then they have the next phase two. This is like China's phase one and phase two. But they're phase one-ing and phase two-ing throughout Asia. And that's where they're going to take their biggest bites, you know, salami slicing chunks first. And they're working on the United States, which is why the Biden administration issued a warning about Hong Kong, issued a warning about Xinjiang province, issued a warning about cyber espionage. Like, I read an article today, which is kind of interesting, that said that China was worried about the Trump administration, because the Trump administration had been so hard on China. But they're now, and they thought that they would, because of, you know, Hunter Biden and his, you know, getting all of that money from China and possible influence peddling with China, that there was a big concern that maybe Biden would be very soft on China. And now, you know, Biden administration has taken more steps. I'm not sure if it's because President Biden wants to do so, but there are certainly a lot of people around him on both sides of the aisle who are worried. Their companies are worried. Their Microsoft is worried. Like, they are taking our DNA. If you want to, you know, read something really interesting, it's that China's trying to amass DNA, and one of the places they're doing it is with pregnancy tests. They're taking pregnancy test data from pregnancy tests and putting in this massive facility where they're keeping track of all of this information. So I think they'll get, you know, they'll do more damage to the United States, split the United States more. There is a huge divide between different political beliefs in the United States. But I think it'll only get worse as China, you know, salami slices a few more people on their side. So the question for me, for you, and for really other people is, how much is your loyalty to the United States worth? Because if I had a lot of money and I could buy your loyalty, or I could buy, you know, your data or your intellectual property, if you had some really good intellectual properties, is it worth $1 million to you? Like, or $2 million? Because I have either 1 or 2 million. Like, I can give you 3 if you really want, you know, because I really want that intellectual property. I mean, China's actually going in, and they have this thing called the 1,000 Talents program, where they went into countries and the United States and plucked out the best people and brought them to China so they could get all their intellectual knowledge of the latest techniques. Wow. And the latest science. I mean, how much is that worth to you? If I give you $200,000 as a new college grad, would you come over? I think it's, you know, it's dangerous.
It's scary.
Right?
Well, I always
most people are willing to sell their souls.
I agree with that. What scares me is, you know, this is to go into immigration, but, you know, but it does deal with this because, you know, we go into colleges and we have, you know, these best, you know, people that are, you know, they're in tech or they're, you know, doctors, and they study here. And then the majority of them, we make them go back. Why not keep those people here? Why should they be going back to China or Japan or South Korea or wherever the hell it is? Keep these people here. If they're doing great work, keep them here, you know? And instead I gotta be careful what I say.
But... No, you're right. You're absolutely right. In Canada, there are lots of people, because I've worked, you know, I'm a college counselor, as you probably know. So I'm a college counselor and I help students with college and grad school. And I even have a set of books on medical and dental and other admissions to schools. But you know, a lot of people will go to school in Canada. Right. Because if you get a graduate degree in Canada, you can stay.
Yeah.
And so some people, their preferred location for college from overseas is Canada, to be able to come over to North America. And I think you're right. Why would we send people who really want to stay? I mean, many of them really want to stay. They're not, you know, they don't really want to go home. Imagine you go back to China. There are 1.4 billion people. We have 330 million people. So, you know, this is not quite 4 times the number of people you're competing against for jobs. And I don't know if the work conditions are very good. My students who go back, they say that they work ridiculously long hours without, you know, tremendous benefits. So yeah. It's not that they are so excited about going back, whether it's China or anywhere else. So a lot of people do want to stay in the United States. Hey, if you want to go back to your country, I'm totally down with it. But if you want to stay and you have this knowledge that that came from our universities, we should welcome these people.
But, you know, looking at the politicians, and you worked on Capitol Hill in the Reagan administration, you worked for a Republican in that aspect, and you've also worked for a Democrat. So when you're seeing all this go on and working in D.C. and all these politicians, you know, like Trump and Holly saying they're against China, and then, you know, Sanders and Warren saying, you know, they want to, you know, rile up China too in a different way. Do you really think that these people are serious? Is this just because the country really wants that? You know, we're seeing the Republicans turn more toward a workers' rights party, more so than the Democratic Party, which is going towards tech and big business. What is your opinion on that? What party is really going to take those tough stances on China and is not just going to talk the talk?
I think that that when you're on Capitol Hill, you're privy to some very sensitive information, and you know more than the general public. We can start there.
Fair.
The second thing is that many politicians are keenly aware of polls. So polls are big. I can poll a group of people in my district, congressional district, or country as well, to see what is the temperature of people's feelings towards tech, workers' rights, surveillance, and so on. So so they gather this information through these polls, and you can see, like, you know, little by little over the last few years, including this year, if you look at Pew Research Studies, the Pew Research Group, they come out with these polls, and you can see that the country is moving towards a more aggressive stance, or wanting a more aggressive stance against China. And yet businesses are in bed with China, so it's very difficult. They really yeah. don't want to have socialism with Chinese characteristics brought over to the United States. I mean, the whole socialist mentality in mm. which you are going to give up your freedom and give up your personal ability to make choices and for the good of the world or the good of the country, this is what, you know, China does en masse. And they don't mind having this constant surveillance and the collection of all of the data and the watching you at all times. There are a billion cameras in China, so they watch wow. everything at all times. So, I mean, there are a lot of people in the United States, and whether they're in bed with China or not, they really don't want to live in that kind of world. So this is a clear demarcation. And I think on the left and the right, except I do think that some people think that socialism is good in the United States. You know, bless their hearts, they can have that, their opinion. I agree
with you. I think it needs to be, you know, somewhat of a mix with capitalism, and because we have had socialism programs. You know, you go back to the fire department, the police department. We're all paying for that, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So I, you know, stuff like that. But you know, full blown on socialism, I agree with you. No way.
Yeah, I think that you were asking about the political makeup of what's happening on Capitol Hill. And I think mm-hmm. it's that as we figure out how to best put the United States in a position where we can provide for our people. So the yeah. polls also say, provide for our people.
Right.
At the same time, we don't enable China to be able to take over the world. This is a growing threat, and so politicians are taking a stronger stance on both the left and the right. I mean, I was surprised, excited, surprised when Nancy Pelosi came out and she said that we want a diplomatic boycott of the 2022 Beijing Olympics. Mm-hmm. And there's a good reason for Nancy Pelosi to say that, because on the level of human rights, which should be something that Democrats and Republicans both agree on, but on the issue of human rights, if we give in and say that slavery and concentration camps are acceptable in today's society, if we agree with that, then we are going to change our country dramatically. And I don't think people in the United States want to have, they don't want to support concentration camps. The concentration camps in Xinjiang, China look just like the ones in Nazi Germany. Wow. All you have to do is look at the satellite photos. You can see, I even have one. Oh, wait, there. You can see like on the front right. cover of that, this yeah. book that I have, the concentration camps look just like Nazi Germany. And honestly, China learned from Nazi Germany. They actually go into cities and they round up all the people and they put them on trains. They load them up and they take them and they put them in these detention centers until they see who's going to comply quickly and easily to re-education and which ones are not. They want to make them Chinese like the rest of the society, and they're going to give up their native language. They are going to learn Mandarin. They're going to obey. They're going to be dutiful soldiers, and there are about 13 million Uyghurs in Xinjiang. Estimates now are between 1 and 2 million are in concentration wow. camps, and I, I'm Jewish. My yeah. family was sent to concentration camps. To be really honest with you, it's not acceptable to me. I went to Dachau in 1972 for the Olympics, yeah. During the Olympics, and it was not acceptable to me. It said never again, and I really believe that never again. My husband and I went to all the concentration camps in Poland. And with each one, I just cry. Just, you know, I read books, and that's why I'm in this. My eighth master's degree is now on World War II history. We can't have concentration camps. And so that said, the more, I believe that the more people in Congress learn about and see photos and look at satellite imagery, the less they can ignore it, left or right. You can't ignore that. And we can't have that anywhere.
But what can we do? I mean, because you look at China and how you've talked about this throughout the whole interview about the tentacles they have, not only all over the world, but in this country also. They're in the pocket of politicians in this country. Anybody that thinks they're not is in a dream world by themselves. So, and obviously all these countries, the American countries, they do their business over there. So it's really hard to put, I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, sanctions, like really tough sanctions on China. I know Trump tried to do those sanctions with the trade war and all that other stuff. If you want to go in depth about that, how we can really try to, you know, stop China from doing this, if we even can at all.
Well, certainly the tariffs were a start. Every American can buy American. Can you remember it? I mean, I don't know, maybe it's because I was born in the 50s and I'm old, but I remember times, you know, a long time ago, and there was this big push, buy American. And, you know, I think we can do that here. You know, we say, you know, so just say no. It takes a village. What are some of these like pronouncements that some of our leaders have said in the past? And they've really caught on. Like, it takes a village. Like, people really get that imagery from Hillary Clinton. And, you know, just say no. And, you know, freedom and so on. We can make up some kind of imagery so that we say we're going to make American buy American. And yet, you know, Gavin Newsom spent $1 billion on buying face masks and PPE for California from China. Really? Do you know how many people in California would have done anything to start producing, like the people who manufacture clothing and so forth? They would have done anything to have those contracts. And yet, even our leaders like Gavin Newsom, you know, sent the contracts to China. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I know people personally who I work with who are clients of mine, who said, you know something, if Gavin Newsom would have given me just a little bit, I would have made sure I live in Orange County, all of Orange County would have had face masks, right? And they would have had it quickly because I would have gotten a whole mess of people to come into the plant and we would have made them. We didn't need China. And, if we believe that we can, you know, we're going to give our contracts to China, if we're going to buy Chinese, things that are made in China, it is complicated. Honestly, it's complicated because China has whole manufacturing facilities in Italy. So now clothing that says made in Italy actually is Chinese manufacturing companies that moved to Italy so that they can actually say that it was made in Italy, even though it's really made by Chinese companies that moved and took over facilities in Italy, right? Yeah. So it's a little bit more the world is more complicated than a 30-second soundbite, but
we can stop buying
Chinese products.
Last question, and we have to do this again because there's so much we can talk about. And we didn't even get to hit any of the other topics I wanted to talk about with you, so I'll have to schedule after this. But Rachel, my last question is, as Americans that disagree with this persecution, as it says on your book, of Muslims, what can we personally do, or can we do anything besides lobbying our legislators?
I think the first thing we have to see, we can't fight against something we don't understand.
Yeah.
So we first have to have awareness, a media campaign that actually explains what's happening. If you ask the random person on the street, where's Xinjiang, China? They would just not know. Do you know there are concentration camps? No, they don't know. Like, we need to first make people aware, because people won't act on anything unless they're aware. And, you know, maybe the best way to get awareness to happen is through social media and young people. Have young people in colleges become more aware of what these issues are, and then spread that that media infiltration through social media and other ways around the country, so that more people are aware. But we have been so, and China took advantage of this time. Imagine we have a pandemic in which everybody's talking about their health. China went in and took over, you know, slices of countries. So now that the pandemic is dying down a little bit, we should start talking about these kinds of issues, because otherwise it'll happen to us. It won't be the Muslims. It'll be other people like the Catholics. And, you know, they've taken down churches. They put Xi Jinping's picture in front of Christ in churches because they want people to worship Christ. I mean, to worship Xi Jinping. I mean, but we don't really know. Many people don't know. I mean, the truth is that I was a math professor, and then I retired from teaching for 35 years. And I said, I need to know what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
I cannot keep my eyes closed and just, you know, worried about whether the integral of 1 over x is the natural log of the absolute value of x plus c. I mean, I know that. Fine. Right?
But you do.
But I need to know about what's happening in the world, right? So I think first you have to make people aware. Second, then spread the information through social media and have activists get involved in these issues. Look for other alternative ways to have clothing made and other products made here. People don't know why we're not supposed to like China. We need to tell them exactly what is happening, that it's a threat not just to the country, but to you. It's a threat to you. Each of us is being threatened, and it's our lives. I don't believe I can ever go back to China again. I love China. I absolutely love the country. It's so beautiful. And when you go to Shanghai, just to walk down the Bund, it's like magnificent with colors and beautiful buildings and so forth. It's the government. I don't have anything against the Chinese people. I don't have anything against, China per se. I would love to go back, but I would be put in prison for sure. So I can't go back. But it's really too bad, because it's the government that won't play nice with countries. They won't play by the law. They want to make their own law. They said, we have new laws. We want to create new laws on the international system within the United Nations. So that's why they've put in place people on all of these committees and boards in the United Nations, so that they can have Chinese rule of law replace rule of law that exists today. That will change our world. It'll change your world too.
Well, Dr. Winston, and I'll close with this, and I do appreciate your time early. Going in depth on this subject. I think it's important. I think millennials and people in general of all ages need to really get in the fight and know what the hell is going on in this country, and not only that, in the world in general. Because what I personally worry about, and like I said, I'll end with this, is, you know, you have these dictatorships like China, North Korea, and they have nuclear bombs, and they are world powers. China owns a lot of our debt. And they have a lot of control in this country that you don't even know about personally, because we're not in those parts of government to know. But regardless of that, you know, they could come together with Russia, and then you could have, you know, God forbid, I hope this doesn't happen, but you could have something like WW3 with just, you know, China's got over 1 billion people. I mean, they could occupy everybody in this country. Maybe 2 or 3 people could occupy one. So you would know the math better for that than me. But it's really scary that scenario, you know, people think that's a joke and it's all fun and games until, again, someone gets hurt or something happens. But that is a legitimate scenario. You can call me crazy if you think that's crazy. But last word, what do you think about that? Are you worried about something like that could happen? Maybe not 5 years, 10 years, but that could come down the road.
I think that that China, if China takes over one more island in the South China Sea, or threatens Japan's Senkaku Islands, or takes over over Taiwan, or encroaches farther into India and other countries, I think everybody in the world will be on heightened alert.
India's got nuclear weapons too.
Right.
So,
but I think it's I think there is danger. And the reason why I said that young people should get involved, because it's their future.
Right.
Right? I was born in the 50s. So, you know, so I mean, I'll probably be around for the next, you know, hopefully a few decades, but for young people, they could be threatened by being in war. So.
Yeah, it's scary. Not only just the nuclear war, the climate change. I mean, there's so many things on the horizon that could really alter. Now we're getting depressing.
No.
Into the depression aspect of the interview, but there's so many things that really could alter our lives in general, whether you're young, old, rich, poor, black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American. It's really scary. But Dr. Rachel Winston, where can people find more about you as we end the interview in a little bit of a sad note?
Okay, so my book, my series, Raging Waters in the South China Sea, China's Power Grab and Expanding Claims, Democracy with Chinese Characteristics, and Belt and Road Under Beijing's Thumb are all in the website, southchinaseabook.com. And this series that's right behind me is the Awaken Now series, and that's at awakennow.com. So so if you want to find more, you can go to lizard_publishing.com. And so all of my books are there. But southchinaseabook.com is where the first set of books are. So that would be a good place to start.
And like I said, this woman knows what she's talking about. Again, 8 master's degrees, working on the 8th one right now. I mean, that's incredible. I still can't get over that. But anyways, the lifelong learner again, Dr. Rachel Winston, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.